Shrug, Gabby tucked the locket under her shirt and focused on the passing landscape and the barrage of people surrounding them. People who weren't wearing tracking devices or traveling with an armed bodyguard at their side. The morning visit to his office was met with a subpoena from Sheila requesting Hayden's child support. Seems the woman was moving forward faster than Hunter could run. Hunter sat across from Ben Lipton and his team of family law attorneys.
She has to consent to a paternity test, Ben told him.
Hunter already had one. Underpaid staff in the clinic Sheila was taking Hayden to had no problem supplying saliva for a little money.
The test will prove I'm the father, he told them. Your job is to use the information I give you to obtain my complete and exclusive custody. As I told you before, she has to be unfit to care for her son. Your stability and proof positive that Hayden is your son will only grant you partial custody. Child support will be inevitable. The woman wants a payout, not the title of mother.
The lawyers glanced at each other.
She will appoint a paternity testing doctor and we'll have ours. That will buy us 48 hours to find something on her that's unfit. You have the reports from my investigators. An antidepressant isn't a smoking gun, and she hasn't seen a doctor for anything psychological in 5 years. She might not provide well for Hayden, but she does have him with adults when she's not by his side. Incompetent adults. Which makes them liable, not her, Ben told him.
The attorney on Ben's left sat forward.
She's not expecting you to take her son. She might come back fighting. She's only in this for the money. Dangle a check. She'll take it.
Ben crossed his arms over his chest.
How can you be so sure?
Hunter knew the lawyers were obligated to keep his secrets, so he gave them what they needed.
Because Hayden isn't my biological son. I never slept with Sheila Watson. My brother did.
A collective sigh went through the room.
And if your brother seeks custody? He can try. Once Sheila proves I'm the father and I confirm it, Noah will have nothing to support his claim. If he tries, I'm sure you men can make his case disappear.
A few nods were knocked back and forth. Hunter stood to leave.
Call me with the doctor we're using. Gabriella and I will be here on Friday for the hearing. If I can push the court that quickly, Ben said.
Hunter offered a cold stare. Ben lifted his hands.
I'll make it happen. That's better. Good day, counselors.
Before he left the room, he heard someone whisper,
And I thought Christmas with my family sucked.
Chapter 27 Gabby sat on the sofa. Her legs curled up under her as the twinkling of Christmas lights added a glow to the room. Lori's words had haunted her all day. Was she making the same mistakes? Was she trusting the wrong man? If Hunter was capable of bribing the law, seducing it, was he doing the same to her? All his mutterings of not being good enough for her infused her with power in their relationship. Was it false power? Was his seduction of her an extension of getting what he wanted? He wanted Hayden. Or maybe he just wanted to stick it to his brother. Lori's other words, the ones not spoken, bothered her too. What if Hayden really was Hunter's son? Perhaps the woman in the mall was fighting for the rights of her son. Gabby hated the doubt running like a crazy person in her head. The alarm on the gate sounded, signaling Hunter's return. She saw the lights of the car, heard the front door open and close. His footsteps hesitated when he entered the room.
Gabby?
She didn't answer, just picked at the fringe of the throw pillow in her lap. He approached slowly until he was standing close enough to take in the scent of his skin. The scent that had seduced her from the first day they met. He knelt down until he was eye level with her.
What happened?
I visited my lawyer today. You remember Lori Cumberland?
How could I ever forget Ms. Cumberland? He asked with a half smile.
Gabby didn't smile back. I told her about the insurance policy, about the international accounts. Hunter lost his smile and sat in the chair to her side.
I told you I'd take care of that.
Gabby lifted her chin. I didn't see a need to wait.
Now's not the time.
That's similar to what she said. Gabby kept her eyes glued to Hunter's. Did you know how difficult it was going to be to clear my name after I became your wife? There wasn't an ounce of emotion on his face. Something inside her died. Jesus. She tossed the pillow from her lap and stood.
Hunter jumped to his feet and grabbed her arm, keeping her from fleeing the room.
I didn't know you, Gabby.
And you were willing to use the information you had to blackmail me, knowing damn well I could still end up in jail for something I didn't do. He moved closer and she pulled from his grasp.
You won't go to jail. I'll see to it.
How are you going to do that, Hunter?
We'll pay the insurance company back.
It's not that simple. You knew that long before you showed up in the back of my limousine. His jaw grew tight.
Yes, I knew that.
When were you going to start working on clearing my name? He looked past her.
Once I gained custody of Hayden. We'll clear your name then.
She colored herself all kinds of fool. Once you have what you're in this for.
None of that was hidden from you, he told her.
And nothing has changed. With everything between us, nothing has changed. You get Hayden, and I end up in jail. He looked at her then, anger close to the surface of his stance.
You really believe that?
I don't know what to believe, Hunter. He took two swift steps and reached for the back of her head. His kiss was hard, demanding, just like the man. Damn her for responding even in her anger. She desperately wanted to believe in him, but she couldn't. Not blindly. Never again. She pulled away and brought a hand to her lips before she turned and fled the room. His tie hung loose around his neck. Ice cooled the bourbon in his glass. The lights of the Christmas tree, the only one he'd had since he was a kid, filled the room. Gabby had finally stopped crying. Every tear was a knife in his side, every sob, and he had nothing to offer as support. He didn't trust himself to go to her, tell her she was wrong about him, when in fact, she wasn't. When he'd first learned of the insurance fraud in the foreign account, he assumed she was guilty of more than trusting the wrong person. A beautiful, artful woman batting her lashes to get what she wanted in life. He blackmailed her before he knew her. Even when he learned more, he still kept himself slightly detached. Get Hayden. Deny his brother of everything. Then Gabby struck again, where he never expected. The Christmas tree mocked him.
There you are.
Andrew walked in the room, took in the half-empty decanter of bourbon, and frowned.
Busy? Not now, Andrew.
Andrew sat, uninvited.
I mean it. Fire me. You're fired.
Andrew simply laughed.
When are you going to slow your personal life down and think before you act?
Hunter didn't comment, merely studied the ice melting in his glass as Andrew went on.
You're brilliant in business. You turn blades of grass into dollar bills. Always capture the flag before the opposing team. Something tells me, however, that on your report card in school, it stated, does not play well with others. Why are you still sitting here? Because I'm the only one who will. If you don't start exercising patience, you're going to be one lonely, bitter, albeit rich, old man. Sound like someone you know? I'm not my father. I'm thinking of a tree and an apple right about now. Funny thing about cliches, they're all true.
Hunter finished the rest of his drink and set the glass aside.
You have a unique opportunity with a woman who has a heart the size of Texas. You're about to bring a child into your home who's going to need more than a bitter old man raising him. You have the world a snap away and you're blowing it.
Hunter fixed his eyes on the only person in his life willing to talk to him this way.
I blew it before I began. Then you need to do what every other red-blooded man out there does. Find some damn duct tape and fix it.
Andrew took to his feet and started to leave the room. Hunter stopped him.
Why do you care if I fix anything?
Andrew looked around the room.
I want the solo title of bitter old man.
Hunter smiled at that.
And the tree is a nice touch.
He walked out of the room, leaving his wisdom behind.
So Blackwell wants to be a daddy. How perfect.
Diaz tapped the table in thought. Of all the useless information he'd obtained by listening to the Blackwells' conversations, this one would pay off.
This is going to be easier than I thought, eh, Raul?
Diaz snapped his fingers.
I need those pictures. Pictures? What pictures? Pagano sent you pictures before he ended up dead. Blackmail-worthy pictures. I think a few were of his wife.
Raul shrugged and twisted back to the computer. Diaz had to give the dead guy credit. He covered his tracks when it came to Gabriella. Marry her, put the money in her name, make her look as guilty as he was, have dirt on her, string her up. Had the man lived, he would have walked far enough to run until the law couldn't find him. Damn shame he ended up with a chest full of lead. Screws up anyone's day. It took Raul a good hour to find and hack into the images. Diaz flipped through the pictures, held the one with Gabriella Blackwell holding her arm out for a hit. Nothing better than an image of Blackwell's wife banging up caught on film.
Perfecto.
There were others, but the most damning was the one of an imperfect socialite in the throes of a drug-induced high. The picture was worth a few million if Blackwell wanted to keep it from the judge deciding his eligibility to hold sole custody of his son. Diaz nodded Raul's way.
Now I need you to find the life insurance company Picano used. I need his policy number, a name of an agent, everything.
Raul sniffed, shot both index fingers in the air, and started typing. Later, Diaz pulled his cigar from his lips, sucked in the smoke, and blew it out slowly. He had everything he needed, and soon he'd have Hunter Blackwell's balls in his hand. The man had a couple of important decisions in front of him. His son, his wife, or his money. Gabby didn't know which room Hunter slept in, but it wasn't hers. She woke the next morning with bloodshot eyes and a headache to kill all others. She'd managed to come to a conclusion somewhere around 2 in the morning. The bed she made was her own. She'd chosen Alonzo and all his false advertising. She'd decided to marry Hunter instead of bringing her troubles to the doorstep of her family. She'd consciously and quite willingly begun a physical relationship with her temporary husband. The emotional attachment wasn't something she had expected, but somewhere between fall and winter, her heart started to crack and Hunter took hold. He said he couldn't be trusted and didn't deserve her. He freely admitted he was using her, and yet she'd hoped that something had changed inside him as it had her. How had Lori put it? To come out of this marriage whole, she'd have to find the cold and detached part of her that had entered into it. Only, as she showered and attempted to hide the circles under her eyes, the image in the mirror was of a broken woman, not a cold one. She squared her shoulders and added one layer at a time. Moisturizer, something to block the circles, a layer of armor disguised as foundation, a blush of confidence she was going to have to fake until it felt natural. Her eyes, the best asset she had, were going to have to pop today. An uplifting swirl of liner and a thick coat of mascara were equivalent to a clown painting on a smile. The dark plum lipstick completed her cosmetic arsenal. She piled her hair on her head with a teasing strand or two lying on her neck. Hunter liked it down. She'd wear it up. Gabby stepped into the walk-in closet and dropped her robe. Every inch of clothing had a job other than what the tailor intended. Her underclothing made her smile, even more when she knew Hunter would like them but never see them. The sexual part of them was over. The knit top hugged her breasts and slimmed over her waist before sitting low on her hips. The silk pants felt like a layer of soft skin, and the 3-inch heels offered the right amount of sex appeal she desired. This entire routine took an hour of her morning and reminded her of how strong she was. No more tears. No more trust. No more mistakes. She moved into the kitchen to find Andrew sitting with a morning paper. He jumped to his feet when she walked in.
Good morning, Mrs. Blackwell.
The need to remind Andrew to call her by her first name stuck in the back of her throat. Cold and detached. Good morning, Andrew.
I've made coffee, or would you prefer tea?
Coffee's fine. He was around the counter and pulling a cup from a cupboard before she could stop him. She accepted the cup and took a sip before muttering her thanks.
Hunter asked me to tell you that he'd gone to the office.
She glanced at the clock on the wall. It was after 9. Fine. She heard footsteps and then the familiar call of her new name.
Morning, Mrs. B.
Good morning, Solomon. He headed straight toward the coffee pot and hummed his approval as he gulped the brew.
I've been perfecting my pancake skills, if you'd like some,
Andrew said. I'm fine with this, she told him. His smile flattened. The sound of the buzzer of the gate interrupted the silence that followed. Andrew answered and let in whoever rang. Gabby sipped her coffee and contemplated her day, her life,
as the men in the house regarded her in strained silence. Andrew pulled her out of her thoughts after he opened the front door. Gabby set her coffee aside and found the valet standing at the door, his hands behind his back. A delivery man, one with an armload of flowers, stood with a mocking grin.
"Special delivery,"
he said as he thrust the bouquet into her arms. Her nose flared, her eyes swelled with unshed emotion. "Who sent them?" As if she didn't know.
"A Mr. Blackwell?"
She didn't trust too many coherent words to pass her lips. "Andrew?" She lifted her free hand. "Can you—"
"I have it, Mrs. Blackwell."
Andrew dug into his pocket and tipped the man before shutting the door. They were beautiful, much like the ones Hunter had sent her the first time they'd met. "I can't do this again." Gabby plucked the card from the flowers and enjoyed the fragrant blooms for the time it took to cross into the kitchen. Once there, she opened the door to the garbage receptacle and dropped the flowers inside. She knew, without a doubt, that every move she made would be reported to her husband. As much as it killed her to throw away perfectly lovely flowers, it was the crossing to the fireplace and the strike of the match that gutted her. She lit Hunter's note with a flame, watched it lick up the sides of the waxed paper before threatening to burn her skin. Then she tossed the card into the cold, dark fireplace unread. "Fool me once," she whispered to herself. As the note evaporated into ash, so did Gabby's concern about the thoughts of others. "Solomon?"
Yes, Mrs. B?
"I'm not a very good driver," she said in a monotone voice as she watched the rest of the note smolder in smoke.
"Yeah, Neil mentioned something to that effect."
She turned away from the message that she'd never read and tried to smile. Both men were staring at her as if she suddenly sprouted a tail. "You're a good driver." Solomon stood a little taller, added a half-assed smile.
"I considered the NASCAR circuit before I joined the service."
A thought formed in her head. "The Aston is back from the shop, right, Andrew?"
"It is."
That solved that. "How do you feel about offering a lesson in defensive driving?" Solomon lifted a brow, blinked. "We'll take my car."
Blink, blink. "The Aston Martin?"
Gabby shrugged. "What's the worst thing that can happen?" Chapter 28. He couldn't concentrate. All it took was one text sent to Hunter to blow his entire day. Andrew took a picture of the flowers he'd sent to Gabby in the trash and added the message, "The card is in the fireplace, unread and smoldering." The next message simply said, "Duct tape." He needed to fix this. Admittedly, he had no idea how. All his life, money, and power fixed his problems. With more money came more power and a quicker resolve. Andrew's words stuck in his head. Slow down. He needed to slow his personal life down or watch it spiral out of control. Flowers in the trash were a sign of an impending tornado. He twisted his desk chair until he was staring out over the city. It was gray, not at all the Southern California weather he'd grown used to. It matched his mood, he supposed. Gabby's too, he guessed. His goals were easily defined a few months ago. Now they were mucked up with emotion and consequences. Having Gabby by his side, having his back with something as simple as decorating a nursery in support, was a priceless example of the depth of her heart. With all she'd been through, he'd think she'd be jaded and dead on the inside. Her family and friends adored her, would think nothing of burying him if he harmed her. Even Andrew was squarely on her side of the swinging pendulum. A conversation, flowers. These things weren't going to duct tape his relationship back together. He wanted it back together. He took in his colorless office and thought of the penthouse condo that held the same empty, quiet life. He wanted more, and he wanted it with Gabby. A plan began to form in his head. A plan that meant slowing down his objectives and speeding up hers. The cell phone in his suit jacket buzzed. He considered ignoring it before he pulled it from his pocket to check the caller. Hope flared when he saw Gabby's name.
"Gabby,"
he whispered her name as his answer. Silence met his ears. He was close to begging.
"Talk to me, Gabby."
He heard laughter. Male laughter. Hunter froze, looked at the screen again, saw Gabby's name.
"Who is this?"
"Mr. Blackwell. I'm your new best friend."
The voice was deep,
with a south-of-the-border accent.
Who is this? Where's my wife?
Ah, your caring wife is right where she's supposed to be, for now. That can change, my friend. I don't take kindly to people stealing my money. Makes my fingers itchy to take from others. You understand, no?
What are you talking about? Who are you?
Hunter leaned over and took his office phone off the hook.
10 million, Mr. Blackwell.
Excuse me?
The voice laughed.
Check your email. Gabriella. Beautiful woman, your wife. She sent you a picture.
Hunter started clicking, found a message in his private inbox, and opened it. His stomach twisted. Gabby, from what had to be during the darkest days of her life, looked like the shell of the woman he knew. Dark circles under her eyes, the white dress hanging on her thin shoulders, her arm extended with a needle hanging out.
Who the fuck are you?
A man who will be $10 million richer very soon, eh? And so you know not to fuck with me? I will give you 10 minutes to keep your wife alive.
Hunter gripped his desk and stood.
Do I have your attention, Mr. Blackwell?
Yes,
he gritted out between his teeth.
Aston Martins have been known to blow up in those Bond films. You might encourage your driver to end his driving lesson to watch the fireworks from outside the car.
What the?
I'll be in touch.
The line went dead. His heart sped, and the light inside him threatened to fade as he dialed his home number and yelled to the closed office door.
Tiffany!
Andrew answered on the first ring.
Find some duct tape. Put Solomon on the phone. He's not here.
Tiffany ran into the room.
Where is he? Where's Gabby?
There was no mistaking the urgency in his voice. Hunter glared at Tiffany.
Get Neil McBain on the phone, now.
Tiffany fled the room as quickly as she entered.
Driving around. Gabby wanted a driving lesson. In the Aston? Yeah. What's going on, Hunter?
Oh, God.
No time.
He hung up as Tiffany scurried back in. Line two.
Neil, talk to me. I just received a death threat for Gabby. I have 9 minutes to get her and Solomon out of the Aston.
Fear kept Hunter's hands moving. The cell phone sat on his desk. He took a chance and redialed Gabby's number. It went to instant voicemail. He slammed his hand against the desk. He heard Neil barking orders through the phone.
Do you have him? Not yet. 8 minutes, Neil.
It was a closed course, so why was Solomon gripping the side of the car with such intensity? Gabby let up on the gas and concentrated on avoiding the cones. She'd done rather well when she kept the speed under 30. At 50, things became a little dicey.
You're oversteering, Solomon instructed her. Relax your grip on the wheel and let the car balance itself out.
The car jerked in the opposite direction.
Relax. Don't let go.
Oh. Gabby took the next curve a little faster and attempted to relax. The phone in her purse rang, and she glanced behind her.
Don't even think about answering that.
She looked at him with a frown. Well, of course not. Solomon swung his gaze out the window and gripped the door rail.
Watch it.
Several cones went down as she missed the next turn completely. She straightened the car as Solomon's phone started to buzz.
Straighten her out and let's try again. You can't let phones and people distract you, Mrs. B, or you're going to end up getting hurt.
Gabby squared her shoulders and started again. They rounded the second turn for the umpteenth time. When Solomon's phone went off again, Gabby praised herself on ignoring the noise. She didn't even look when Solomon answered his phone.
I'm a little busy right now, he told whoever called. What?
Ease into the corner. Let the wheel do the work. Perfect. Not one cone off course.
Oh, fuck.
Gabby wanted to look toward the passenger seat, but thought Solomon was testing her resolve to avoid distractions. She smiled and kept driving.
Stop the car.
The S-curve was next. Gabby kept going.
Stop the car.
This time Solomon grabbed the wheel. Gabby hit the brake, hard. As soon as the car rolled to a stop, Solomon hit the button of her seatbelt.
Get out.
What? What's?
Get out.
He reached over, opened the door, and pushed. She couldn't move fast enough before Solomon was out of his side and dragging her from the car. He grasped her hand and ran. She had no choice but to move her feet or risk taking them both down. What's going on?
The words no sooner fell from her lips than noise, heat, and an unknown force pushed her off her feet. Solomon tucked her into his side as the ground rushed to meet them. Her left arm took the brunt of her fall, and pain shot through her. She couldn't hear, but the flames coming from behind told her why. Gabby shielded her eyes when the second explosion went off. Solomon forced his face in front of hers. His lips were moving, but all she heard was ringing. The Aston blazed in flames. Solomon placed a hand on her chin. His mouth moved in what she thought was a question. Are you okay? She nodded even as she began to shake. I can't hear. She felt vibration in her throat, but couldn't hear her own words. Solomon pointed to his own ears and shook his head. He lifted his hand that still held his cell phone and said something into it before dropping it to his side. One of the back tires blew, and Gabby's entire body shook. Her life could have ended today. Solomon reached around her and held on. She let him. The closed driving course belonged to the police department, making them first on the scene. Gabby knew her hearing loss wasn't permanent when she heard the high pitch of the fire department's sirens. Dazed, she watched a dozen officials running around the otherwise empty lot. The orange cones close to the Aston melted in a surreal, slow death. Someone lifted her arm and encased it in a bandage. She looked down, noticed blood for the first time. Adrenaline must have taken over, because she hadn't felt a thing after her first kiss with the ground. Shock, she realized, on a level outside her consciousness. People around her were speaking, but she couldn't hear any of the softer sounds. It wasn't until a paramedic attempted to get her to stand that the adrenaline left her system. Pain shot in her arm, her knee, and her head was on fire. The medics lifted her onto the gurney and laid her down. Solomon shook off the men at his side and stayed close. Watching life and feeling the pain begin a series of explosions inside her, without all the sound that came with it, offered a twist in her conscious. Movement to her left had her twisting her head. Hunter, his crisp suit slightly ruffled. Why she thought of the condition of his clothing wouldn't occur to her for hours, but his clothes stuck out. The frantic man under them, however, wasn't something she recognized. He pushed through the police at the scene, pointed her way, and rushed to her side. Sound was muffled, a mix of sirens and low-pitched bass that made it impossible to hear single words. Hunter was talking to her, but she couldn't take in a single word. He gripped her hand and turned his attention to the paramedic. Hunter nodded a few times, then looked at her. That's when she saw it. Emotion. Raw. Unscripted. Unshed tears sat behind his eyes. Desperation filled his face. He climbed into the ambulance with her, spoke to someone behind him. When the door closed and what she could hear was nothing but the screech of a noisy emergency vehicle, she closed her eyes. Hunter squeezed her hand. She squeezed back. Apparently, patience was something Hunter was going to learn in the course of a week. He arrived in time to sit beside Gabby on the way to the hospital, but he couldn't talk to her. The second she was unloaded from the back of the ambulance, the emergency room staff whisked her away. Someone dragged him away to ask questions, most of which he couldn't answer. Allergies to medications, previous medical conditions. He didn't know his wife at all. It wasn't long before Neil and Gwen arrived. Shortly after, Samantha ran in. When Judy arrived, she was on the phone with Gabby's family. Neil explained what he knew but didn't elaborate. When one of the nurses called Hunter's name, he jumped. So did everyone else in their party. She ushered them into a small room, where the women took a seat and the men stood. Your wife is resting comfortably, Mr. Blackwell. The doctor medicated her and splinted her arm. Splinted her arm? Samantha asked. A fracture. Nothing that won't heal in 6 weeks. Hunter wasn't worried about her arm.
Can she hear anything yet?
The nurse didn't commit. Like the medics told you, the blast will affect her hearing for a few hours. She responds to loud sounds, but words might take a day to come back. Most of the time this is temporary. The man she was with?
Solomon,
Neil asked. Yes, his hearing is already returning. Thank God. At least they could talk to him and learn something about what had happened. Not that Hunter needed that.
When can I see her?
Hunter asked. I can take you back now, two at a time. We're really busy and can't have the halls filled with people. Hunter stood and Judy took the space beside him. If I don't give Meg an update, she'll go crazy. The nurse led the two of them through the busy halls of the ER and into a private room where Gabby lay. Her eyes were closed, her arm hung in a sling. The monitors hooked to her buzzed with bleeps and dings. None of it made any sense. All that mattered was that the woman on the gurney was breathing. She opened her slightly glossy eyes and tried to smile. "Oh, Gabby." Judy moved to the gurney first, placed her hand next to Gabby's. "Can you hear me?" Gabby focused for a minute, then muttered, "Can't hear you." She lifted a whiteboard someone in the ER had given her and pointed to it. Judy lifted it, scribbled the question, "How do you feel?" and then turned it toward Gabby. "Like garbage," he heard Gabby say. Gabby laid her hand over Judy's before she could write another question. "Tell Val I'm fine." The words were almost a whisper this time, evidence that Gabby couldn't hear her own voice. Judy looked at Hunter. "Does she look fine to you?"
"No."
She looked tired, injured, drugged.
"There isn't anything Val can do, even once they get here. Put the man at ease. Tell him what the nurse told us. Broken arm, temporary hearing loss."
"What if it isn't temporary?" Hunter's nose flared.
"There still isn't anything Val can do. Give the man something to hope for."
Judy nodded and wrote a note. "Calling your brother. Love you." Gabby tried to smile before closing her eyes. Judy left the room, and Hunter moved to the chair beside the gurney and sat while Gabby slept. He slowed down to the beats of her heart on the monitor. Hunter paused, his life. Every once in a while, a loud sound would present itself outside the door of her room, and he felt her jolt, proof she was hearing something even as she slept. The phone in his pocket buzzed, rocking him out of his thoughts. He answered when he saw Remington's number.
"I don't have time for you right now."
Silence. Hunter waited, and then bit his lip.
"Get my message."
The Hispanic voice filled the call.
"You're a dead man," sat on his lips,
practicing the patience life was teaching him. Hunter said,
"Yes. No cops, Mr. Blackwell. Questions will be asked. Questions you can divert. 10 million. Cash. Not possible. Shall I blow up a daycare, Mr. Blackwell?"
Hunter now knew what it felt like to have his balls in a vice.
"When? I'll be in touch."
Chapter 29. Pause. Pause everything. Easier said than done. Random car explosions had a way of attracting police attention. Fortunately, or perhaps unfortunately, Gabby wasn't able to communicate with the authorities. The amount of friends that exploded on the scene was ridiculous. And to sweeten the pot, the media had parked themselves outside the hospital doors in search of a story. Hunter looked around the lobby of acquaintances and found one set of stoic eyes. He waved Neil over and suggested they find a quiet, private place to talk.
"The police are asking questions," Neil told him once they were alone. "The caller said no police."
Hunter ran a hand on the back side of his neck.
"Tell me exactly what he said."
Hunter rephrased the first conversation on the phone and then told Neil about the second.
"Both times, the phone calls came in from phone numbers I recognized. First was Gabby's cell, then a colleague." "So our guy has hacking skills." "How can he do that?" "Same way someone sends emails about Viagra to you using grandma's email address. All you need is a contact list."
Hadn't Remington said that his phone had been jacked in Colombia?
"Fuck." "He had a thick Hispanic accent."
Neil scowled.
"Like, say, a Colombian drug lord?"
Hunter came to the same conclusion.
"Have you heard from your people in Florida?" "I have the name Diaz. No description. From what I'm told, he has all his dirty work done for him. His drug operation is well oiled, and if anyone on his route is caught, they end up dead. Looks like he has ties to the prison system in Colombia, as well as Florida and Texas. He's been quiet since Picano's last shipment ended up in the bottom of the ocean."
Hunter shook his head.
"I deal with corporate sharks, Neil. This is out of my league." "Lucky for you, I'm not out of mine. I'll have my cyber team work on the cell phone calls. You need to convince Gabby to accept a house arrest until we solve this. We can protect her there. The car was in our garage this morning." "Didn't you tell me it was in the shop last week?"
He'd forgotten that. Neil moved on.
I'll check on that. Most likely our guy used that opportunity.
How did he know there was an opportunity to take?
He's watching you. Watching Gabby.
Hunter found himself looking around.
What about Hayden?
It's easier to protect him in your home.
I don't have custody yet. If I mention any of this to the mother, she'll run to the wrong people, painting a target on both of them.
Is there someone you can trust to make them disappear?
Holy hell. He was so screwed.
They released her from the hospital the next day. Gabby's hearing returned, and the only indication that she'd escaped near death was a broken arm and a scraped shin. Val had called her first thing in the morning to express his concern and offer her safe haven on his island. Thankfully, Neil and Gwen had convinced her brother and the rest of the family to stay away. She spoke to her brother in Italian, doing her best to keep any possible ears eavesdropping from understanding her words.
I want you home, Gabby.
And invite this on your doorstep? I don't think so. I made this bed. She heard her brother grunt.
If you weren't married to this man, none of this would have happened.
Or I could be dead. Please, Val, don't make this harder than it is. I will call you every day.
And text me every night.
Fine. Please try not to worry. They spoke for a few minutes before Val finally relented and hung up. A new car drove Gabby home. There was a car that followed with more security than any one woman should ever need. She couldn't imagine the Secret Service providing this kind of detail. Andrew met her at the door with a hesitant smile.
So happy you're home, Mrs. Blackwell.
Thank you, Andrew. She looked around the living room, where nothing had changed. Hunter wasn't there. He'd left her side during her conversation with Val without a commitment of his return. Gwen had whispered in her ear, once her hearing had returned, that Hunter and Neil were working closely together. She'd also told Gabby that a mandatory house arrest was in order to keep her protected. Seemed life had been slapping her in the face enough for Gabby to heed her friend's words. Refusing more than a couple of Motrin for the pain in her arm, Gabby moved slower than she'd have liked. As easy as it would have been to find her bed, literally, and lie in it, she opened up her computer and ran it through several security checks. She wasn't big on social media and didn't have to worry about eyes there. But there were a few online accounts that she dropped into and changed all her passwords. She called and canceled her cell phone service, found another carrier, and ordered a phone to be delivered with a new number. She logged into the foreign accounts, determined nothing in them had changed, and backed out. Gabby systematically went through a list of the items she needed to replace from her missing purse. Crazy how when it blew up, everything slowed down. Credit cards, driver's license. When it was all done, Gabby pushed away from the desk and moved into the kitchen. Andrew and Solomon stopped talking when she entered the room.
This is going to get uncomfortable in one day if you don't stop doing that, she told them both.
Sorry, Mrs. B.
She crossed to the pantry and looked inside.
I need to go to the store, she said.
Mr. B suggested we stay here.
She knew that. Let me rephrase. I need groceries from the market. We can order them to be delivered, ask a stranger to show up, or someone can go for me.
As it turned out, they ordered the food and Andrew went with a security guard to retrieve it. One-handed baking wasn't ideal, but it kept her from wondering where the hell Hunter had been gone to all day. She had questions, questions only he could answer. When she pulled the last of the cookies from the oven, the guard at the gate informed her that the police were requesting a conversation with her. Solomon was on the phone before the team of officers were let into the house. Connor led the police into the house and stood at the door. Both men wore uniforms with every possible toy tucked in their belts. One kept his side to Connor, while the other scanned the room as he entered. She approached the two men and told them her name.
Thank you for speaking with us, Mrs. Blackwell. I'm Officer Delgado. We spoke on the phone last week.
Yes, about the missing boy.
Right.
I hope you found him.
The police exchanged glances.
We did. Unfortunately, he was deceased.
Gabby felt her jaw drop.
Oh, no. What happened?
We're treating it as a homicide. He was found inside his burned-out work van in the desert past Lancaster.
That's awful.
His family is devastated.
I can't imagine. What can I do for you? I already told you what I know. Officer Delgado looked at Solomon, who had just entered the room, and Connor, who was at the door. His eyes traveled over Andrew before returning to Gabby.
Didn't your car blow up yesterday?
Her face went blank. Solomon moved to her side.
The car was in the shop last week.
Delgado took a tiny step back.
You're Mrs. Blackwell's bodyguard?
Solomon offered a nod.
And who are you?
The second officer asked Connor.
Security, Connor said. And the man at the gate?
Gabby stepped in. My husband is a very wealthy man. We can't be too careful.
I find it interesting that you have a house full of security shortly after your own life was recently spared and another was taken. I also find that dots in a line eventually connect.
I don't know what happened to that boy, officer.
But you know something.
Solomon stepped between the officer and Gabby.
This meeting is over, officer. Connor will show you out. We only want to talk to you, Mrs. Blackwell. No one is accusing you of anything.
Was that what was happening? Suddenly, the presence of the cops was anything but comfortable.
Are you arresting anyone?
Solomon asked. Delgado met Solomon's gaze and turned to leave.
We'll be in touch.
Gabby waited until after the officers left before turning to Solomon. What the hell was that all about?
I don't know.
She glared. That man was right. My car blowing up? The missing boy who was last seen in this house? Those odds are too good to ignore. They're connected, aren't they?
This is the first time hearing of the kid, Mrs. B.
She remembered the young man's smiling face as he wired one of the televisions, envisioned him flirting with the girls. There were a lot of people in the house that day. They could be in danger.
We don't know that.
We can't rule it out. Holding back information might result in someone else getting hurt. Or worse. She twisted toward Andrew. Where is Hunter? It was the first time she'd asked.
I don't know.
Well, that's convenient. She lifted the phone and dialed Hunter's office. Tiffany apologized, said he wasn't there, asked about her well-being. No, Tiffany didn't know where Hunter was. He asked for her to clear his calendar for the rest of the week. Gabby hung up and dialed his cell. Voicemail picked up. I don't know where you are, and wouldn't care if the police hadn't just left our house. I need answers, Hunter. If I don't get them soon, I'm going to the police myself and telling them everything I know. No sooner than the space of time it took to hang up the phone, it was ringing again.
It's Neil.
Gabby glanced at the hidden camera she knew Neil and his team monitored. Where's Hunter?
I can't tell you that, Gabby. Going to the police could be suicide.
A boy is dead. She heard him sigh.
Tell me what you know about him. What exactly was he doing at the house?
He wired the televisions, connected the cables, stuff like that. I think he helped a few of the girls with hanging some of the higher Christmas lights.
Anything about him seem odd?
There was a massive crew that day. Nothing felt off. She paused. Except the tree delivery guys. They weren't off so much as overly helpful.
Tree delivery?
Neil cussed under his breath.
I'm sending over a team.
You already have a team here, she said in protest.
A different team. No more talk about going to the police, Gabby. You have to trust me on this.
If someone else ends up dead...
We will find them. Put Solomon on the phone.
Frustrated, she shoved the phone into Solomon's hand and left the room. Hunter pulled into his father's drive in a Jeep he'd picked up from the dealer before noon. If anyone was following him... They would have targeted the town car he had one of the security guards jump in the back of. It was all very cloak and dagger, but he didn't trust anyone. Wearing jeans, something he did on such a rare occasion, he had to hunt in an unopened box that had been sent from the high-rise condo he recently slept in. Hunter glanced around the secluded home of his father. Tucked into the far suburbs of the Santa Clarita Valley, his father's property wasn't gated or secure in any way. No one cared to notice. There was a pickup in the drive, one Hunter had bought his dad a few years back. Beside it, a tiny sports car 5 years past its prime. He pulled the key out of the ignition and lifted the collar on his jacket. Hiding under sunglasses and a baseball cap, Hunter jogged up the steps to his father's home and didn't bother to knock. Hunter knew for a fact that a maid showed up every week to clean the place. Gardeners took care of the yard, and if the maid found the cupboards bare, she ordered groceries that were delivered. Hunter might not care to spend time with his father, but he made sure the man had the basics. He shed his cap and sunglasses the moment he closed the door. He pushed past the familiar hall and up the few short steps of the split-level home. Standing in front of the sliding glass door was Noah, his back to him.
"I was starting to wonder if you were coming."
Hunter looked around the room.
"Where's Dad?"
Noah didn't turn from his perch, simply nodded behind him.
"In the den? Probably out cold."
Hunter tossed his keys, hat, and glasses on the table. He set the briefcase he brought with him down and left it. He paused, as he'd been trying to do regardless of how difficult it felt. How had he and his brother gotten to this point? How could they be as different as they were? Wasn't there a time when they enjoyed each other? Would have blackened the eye of the other guy just for saying the wrong thing to their sibling? High school? It all changed in those formative years, and there was no going back. Hunter moved to the front window of the house and looked out. When he was confident no one had parked themselves outside the drive, he moved back into the dining area where his brother stood.
"I don't have a lot of time," Hunter told him.
Noah's laugh started out slow, then grew.
"You never do, brother. This time it's not about me."
Noah turned then. When they were younger, looking at his identical twin was routine. Now he found the image of an animated version of himself eerie.
"Since when?"
Pause. Patience.
"Why are you doing this?"
If Hunter was ever going to get answers, it was now. Noah looked down Hunter's frame.
"Wearing a wire, Hunter?"
Hunter shrugged off his jacket and shed his shirt with one smooth scoop.
"Do I need to take off my pants?"
Noah lifted an eyebrow.
"Because I could," he said.
"Because you stopped taking my calls?"
"I cut you off, something he needed to do years ago."
Hunter flung his hand behind him to indicate their father.
"You think you're so much better than everyone, but you never saw this coming, did you?"
Hunter sucked in a slow breath.
"No, I didn't."
He glanced at the briefcase on the kitchen table.
"How much?"
Noah ran a hand down his face and over his chin as he took in the case.
"What changed your mind?" "Doesn't matter. You have what you want. Name your price, Noah."
Noah placed his hand on the briefcase and Hunter slapped his over his brother's. Their eyes caught and didn't let go.
"My conditions."
Noah eased his hand away.
"You leave here, retrieve Hayden, and meet my pilot."
Noah gripped the back of a dining chair.
"And where are we going?"
"Someplace safe."
A flicker of humanity passed over his brother's face. Had Hunter not been watching, he would have missed it.
"Safe."
Hunter's next words were slower than a turtle marching across the desert sand.
"Your son's life has been threatened, all in an effort to get to me. You take this money and your son, and you both disappear. I'll contact you when it's safe to move on with your life. And if I don't agree, then you take this, give it to Sheila, split it, burn it for all I care, but Hayden comes with me. Today."
To say Noah was stunned would have been an understatement. His jaw dropped. His eyes were tiny specks of confusion.
"You're willing to take my son?"
Hunter made sure he articulated every syllable of his next words.
"Hayden is already mine. I'm a week away from taking permanent custody, and neither you nor Sheila will see one penny."
It was a bluff, but Hunter had to try. A weak smile started on Noah's lips.
"Always impatient. I don't know how you manage to get so far in business when you show everyone your cards."
Hunter slammed his hand on the table, causing everything on it to jump.
"My wife's car was blown up yesterday, Noah. She escaped with her life by less than a minute. Someone out there with bigger balls than yours is willing to take out your son because you told the world he's mine. Either you leave with him now, or I take him and keep him safe. Make your choice and make it now. I don't have any more time to fuck with you. Fair warning, Noah, if Hayden comes with me, he's mine. You'll never see him again."
Noah turned white. Hunter looked at his watch.
"I have a car coming in 5 minutes.
He swept the car keys across the table until Noah had to catch them or watch them fall to the floor.
"I have a bodyguard and a private investigator watching your son. Both are ready to take him on my call.
What's it going to be, Daddy?
Noise from behind him had Hunter turning around.
What's it going to be, Noah?
Sherman Blackwell stood, scruffy-faced and more than a little worn around the edges, as he fixed his eyes on the two of them. How much of the conversation he'd heard, Hunter couldn't say. But from the look in the older man's eyes, it was enough to understand the severity of the situation. Noah grasped the briefcase and opened it. Inside were stacks of hundreds. It paid to have business associates who owned casinos, where cash could be removed and IOUs given. Noah took two stacks of bills, shoved them in his pocket, and closed the case. He tapped his hands alongside it and said,
For Sheila. I'll keep her with me until I hear from you. If I leave her here, there's no telling what she'll do.
With the briefcase in one hand, the keys to the Jeep in another, Noah stood.
Go to John Wayne Airport. I'll call my people.
Who's Neil?
Doesn't matter. I'll be in touch.
Noah hesitated as he passed their father, and then disappeared behind the door. Sherman crossed the room, opened the fridge, and pulled a beer he didn't need from the box.
What's this about a wife?
Chapter 30. Hunter finally pulled into the gates as the sun was setting. Gabby was livid. He stepped from the back of the car and opened his arms to all the activity.
What's going on?
With one hand on her hip and anger in her words, she told him the only reasonable thing she could. Chaos. Chaos I'm dealing with alone because you're too busy to bother.
I had something to take care of.
Gabby rolled her eyes and twisted away. Neil and company had descended on her home like locusts. The garland around the door had been stripped away, the Christmas tree in the living room nearly decimated as they searched for God only knew what. Neil? Lord only knew how Gwen put up with his quiet, tight ass. The man offered nothing. While a team looked over every strand of lights, every inch of garland, every decoration she'd had the staff place a few days before, Neil and a few others were inside poking in every nook and cranny of the house. Before she could make it back inside, the man of the hour met them both out the front door.
We found bugs that don't belong to us.
Gabby stood motionless. Hunter wasn't.
Where? Inside the TVs. Audio for the guest room, the master bedroom, video with audio in the living room.
The hair on Gabby's arms stood up. Someone has been listening to us? Watching us? Hunter was livid.
How did this happen? Sophisticated equipment placed inside the televisions. The technology isn't something I've seen before. My equipment didn't pick it up, and my stuff picks up an out-of-place ant.
Gabby grabbed Neil's thick arm. Do you think the deceased boy placed the bugs?
I think it's a high probability. Obviously not for his gain, since he ended up dead. Can you trace the feeds? Hunter asked. The transponder looks internet-enabled. If we turn off our internet, it will stop reporting feeds? I'd need a lab to see if it holds its own hotspot.
So whoever is listening, watching, could be anywhere in the world? Gabby asked.
But close enough to rig your car and know when you come and go. No, my gut says whoever did this is physically close.
Gabby pinched her eyes with her free hand. What a nightmare.
We've removed the bugs and are searching for more.
Won't the police want to know about the bugs?
I'll tell them,
Neil said as he turned away.
Eventually.
He moved back into the house, leaving Gabby and Hunter standing in the driveway.
You should be resting,
he told her. And you should be here. I realize this marriage is a complete farce, but you could at least pretend to care. She turned, not letting him reply. Instead of moving into the master bedroom full of bugs and men stripping the room, she detoured to the guest room that was void of television and slammed the door. She flopped on the bed, instantly regretted the force with which she landed, and propped her broken arm on a pillow. When her eyes started to leak, she told herself it was the pain in her arm causing it. Hunter crossed the threshold behind Gabby. His feet faltered when he realized the magnitude of destruction Neil and his team had managed in search of bugs. No wonder Gabby was so upset. She'd worked so hard to create a holiday on an empty canvas to have it all look like the Grinch showed up and took it all down. Andrew met him in the living room.
These men are like bulls in a china shop.
I can see that.
Hunter's nose caught his attention and had him twisting around. Laying on the kitchen island were drying racks and platters filled with cookies and sweet breads. His mouth watered, and he licked his lips. One of Neil's workers swept a cookie from the counter and waved it in the air.
I'm addicted. What's all that?
Andrew crossed to the kitchen and positioned a nutcracker that had been nudged out of place.
Seems Gabby bakes when she's upset.
With one hand? Hunter asked.
She managed.
He'd forgotten to eat lunch and approached the mini bakery with a growling stomach. He picked up something that looked like a tiny glazed breadstick sprinkled with sesame seeds and popped it in his mouth.
Oh my God, he muttered with a full mouth.
Someone behind him caught Andrew's attention.
Hey, watch that.
Andrew shot past him to keep one of the mini trees in the dining room from being toppled over. Hunter's phone buzzed. He glanced at the screen to see a text message from Remington. Cargo is airborne. He placed his hands on the counter and slumped his head. His brother had done the right thing. Well, he'd taken the money, but Hunter expected nothing less, and Hayden was safe. A strange empty space inside him opened up. He'd gotten used to the idea of a child in his life. Even if it wasn't his son, Hunter was ready. He'd never held the child, nor had he seen him outside of a photograph, but the loss wasn't mistakable. Hayden left a strange hole. Neil's men started to funnel out of the main living quarters of the house and into the backyard. Andrew was righting the mess they left. Hunter shrugged out of his jacket and joined him. They worked together in silence. The living and dining rooms were set. A decent dent had been made out of Gabby's cooking before Neil's men wound up their equipment and left. Andrew called for a dinner delivery, and Neil hung back.
Have you heard from our guy?
Neil asked. Hunter shook his head.
You will. He won't like his eyes and ears being taken away.
Are you sure they're all gone?
Neil offered one affirmative nod.
What's the next step? We wait.
The weight of the day started to pull Hunter down,
like pawns on a chessboard. This guy isn't used to waiting. It won't be long.
Hunter was about to ask him what he meant when Rick popped his head into the room.
We're all set downstairs.
Downstairs?
Neil turned away.
Follow me.
They twisted down the steps and into the wine cellar that had yet to be stocked with anything but dust. In the center of the room was a desk and four monitors. A man Hunter didn't recognize sat with his back to them, a set of earphones on his head. He clicked a mouse, typed something in, and then realized they were standing there. He pulled off the earphones and pushed the rolling chair away from the desk.
We're all set,
he told Neil. Hunter peered closer. The monitors were images sent from all parts of the house, hallways, kitchen, living room. He saw the Christmas tree in full living color. The backyard was a set of shapes, as if through some kind of night vision lens. One of the security guards outside walked by a camera, and the lens followed him until he was out of the frame.
Have you two met?
Neil asked Hunter, as he pointed to the other man. The other man extended a hand.
Dennis, I've been watching on the other side.
And now we'll be watching from here.
Hunter didn't argue. Dennis clicked a few buttons and the full-screen monitor switched to an office space. His downtown L.A. office space.
How the hell? Floral delivery with a bug. Our bug.
Hunter turned his eyes to Rick. The man was all smiles and a wink.
Comes in handy. Trust me.
Is all this necessary?
Consider it DEFCON 4. There's one man dead. Gabby and Solomon nearly ate it yesterday, and we have yet to figure out when and where the bomb found its way under the car. Someone is willing to kill for a chunk of money,
Rick told him.
I doubt he'll come here to get it. From the looks of the equipment we found, this guy isn't stupid. He's going to want leverage to ensure he gets the money he wants.
Leverage?
Collateral?
Rick said. Hunter shivered.
You mean Gabby? Or Hayden?
Rick said.
Hayden is taken care of.
It was Neil and Rick's turn to offer looks of confusion.
He's on a plane right now with his real parents. My brother will keep his head low until I tell him otherwise. One less potential hostage,
Dennis said from the desk. The word hostage wasn't one Hunter wanted to hear, even if he knew that's exactly what all this was about. He pointed to a dark corner of one of the monitors.
What's that one? Reserved for your cars.
Dennis clicked, brought the image of the front seat of the town car, clicked again to view the front seat of his Maserati.
Lights from a car pulled into the frame of the front gate. Dennis turned up the volume, and they witnessed their surveillance together. Hunter didn't recognize the new guard at the gate, but he spoke with the driver of the car. Looked like their dinner had arrived. The guard didn't open the gate, simply paid for the meal through the bars, took the food, and thanked the delivery man before he took off. Solomon retrieved the bags, said something about bringing the man back a plate, and then walked down the drive and into the house. Back inside, Andrew took plates from the cupboard.
"Should I wake Mrs. B?" Solomon asked from the monitored image.
Andrew looked past the other man before Dennis cut off the audio feed.
"I try my best to disconnect any private conversations. Can't guarantee it," Dennis said. "Privacy will have to wait," Hunter replied. "I will click in and record every telephone call. It takes a few seconds to amplify the opposing conversation. If our guy calls, I need you to signal me and turn off any removable noise." "Wave and turn down the TV." "Got it."
Neil went on to point out that the bathrooms and walk-in closet weren't monitored.
"Looks like you have everything covered."
And it did. It also helped to know that every man in the house, sans himself, and Andrew were armed. If this were to go on for any length of time, he'd rectify that, too. Rick took his jacket off the back of the chair.
"I'll be back in the morning."
He nudged Dennis's arm before pointing to the screen.
"Chinese food sounds good. Hope Judy's game."
He took the stairs two at a time as he left. Hunter walked Neil out at a slower pace. Neil placed a hand on the top of his car as he opened the door.
"My wife is going to want a report on Gabby."
Hunter blew out a breath.
"You've spent more time with her today.